I don't mean to name drop. I really don't. But I just want to explain why I was watching it on mute. I was watching the game tonight in a restaurant with Charles Barkley. And Charles Uncensored, watching a game. I've had a couple of opportunities to do that, is spectacular. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it for free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. I have been a YouTube TV user for years. Huge fan. Use it on the road all the time. It's awesome on your phone. I highly personally endorse it. They paid me no extra money for that. Joining me from Washington, D.C., coming back on the pod. He must not have hated it. Dominique Foxworth.
Thanks for having me back. I loved it. It's fun. I like basketball.
I'm glad you do, because because we like to do, we like to talk basketball here on this spot. And joining us from Los Angeles, I believe her first time on the show, and thank you so much for taking time out in an alleged off season. It's Mina Kimes. Hey, Mina.
Hi. Hello. I'm so glad to be joining. Am I? Does this mean I'm part of the collective? Is there a
card? I asked the same question, and you better not give her special treatment.
No, there's a vote that has to happen amongst the collective. I made a joke the other day that Tim Bontemps and Tim McMahon were not a part of the committee that decides, which upset McMahon. He sent me a text the following morning, so I'm not going to speak on it any longer. Just one day, meaning you may get a tap on the shoulder, and one day you may not. So it's just the way it works. But thank you for joining me on this night. We, you know, we had this all planned out for seven games, and we're done after four, these special Western Conference podcasts. What a remarkable game. The Nuggets hold off the Lakers by two. I thought it was just both teams wanted it so badly. It's the exact type of playoff game you want to see. The Lakers absolutely did not lay down. You always hear these jokes about, you know, 1-2-3 Cancun, etc. LeBron James played all but 4 seconds of this game at age 38 years old. He basically sent a message that he is not done, although I do feel like they paid for it at the end, because I think LeBron had no gas left in the tank. He had a couple of kind of wild shots. They decided to go to him down the stretch. And then there was one play where he was isolated up against Jokic, and he basically just didn't have it in him to go for it. And Darvin ended up calling timeout, Darvin Ham. But I don't want to focus on that. I'd rather focus on the overall performance of LeBron pouring it out against Jokic, who had another triple-double. Mina, this I know if you're a Laker fan, it's hard to swallow the season is over. This was high-level basketball, and I thoroughly enjoyed this game.
I absolutely love the, and I think I'm stealing this from Bill Simmons. He always talks about this, the aging star putting up like the, you know, final fight and giving everything. That genre of game is one that I always enjoy. And I think I'm going to remember this game for that as much as I will for, you know, Jokic, like breaking the triple double playoff record and his general virtuosity. But there were other Jokic performances that I'll probably remember more, and I'm sure I'll remember from the finals. This one, to me, I'll remember as the one where LeBron put the team on his back and it wasn't enough.
I like that genre of game also, Mina, but I would like that genre of game to end with us having one last time to see our guys succeed. It was just the way that the game closed out, and I know, Brian, you said you don't want to focus on those last few possessions, but those weren't pretty. And, I mean, you can't blame the Lakers or LeBron. I feel like this is similar to the conversation that we had after game two. Is like they played well enough to beat a lot of teams, but they ran into a really good team, and Lakers fans should be really overjoyed, honestly, with how this season turned out, considering how it started.
The shot that Jokic hit in the fourth quarter, the step back, it looked like the Dirk. I don't know if I don't know what's said on the broadcast because I was watching it on silent. It looked like the Dirk statue in Dallas. You know, they put up a Dirk statue of his fadeaway this year, and it's kind of ridiculous because the fade angle is like, Dirk didn't lean back that far, did he? That it was like that statue was how was what Jokic looked like on that play and getting his foot back behind the 3-point line. When you get, you know, it's a 2-point game, a lot of things determined it, but that shot was just enormous in the whole scheme of things. I mean, you know, he threw in some shots in this series that were crazy. That was absolutely wild. And if you're going to get beat by a guy who's throwing in shots like that, you say you're the better team. You know, LeBron has been on the opposite side of doling out, just being the better player. He's faced guys who put it all on the line and he just pushes them down. That's what Jokic did. He just was like, look, you're awesome. I'm better. And, you know, the correct result happened in this series. The Nuggets were the better team and they won. And that was Jokic down the stretch. I mean, I don't know what you can say about his performance. It was just masterful. And I say that in a game where LeBron had 40 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, and only 1 turnover in 48 minutes, 15 of 25 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3-point range. He cannot give a better effort, and it wasn't enough. And he may not be happy about it, but he'll live with that one. Here's what I want to know, Dominique. Obviously you were a professional football player. I don't know what you did at halftime, but when LeBron left the court with 4 seconds left in the first half, the only time he was off the game, and he immediately went to the back, took off his uniform top. What did he do when he went in that locker room? Did he vomit? Did he go to the bathroom? Did he pass out on the ground? Did he jump into the hot tub or the ice tub? What do you think he ice was tub, going back the there ice to tub do?
Sounds good. I'm not a butt naked pooper. I know some people got to strip all the way down to poop. Maybe that's what LeBron was doing, but maybe the ice tub makes sense. I think I am a former athlete, and I have to tell people this every now and then is. It came to my attention when we were talking about Tom Brady's mentality, and I am as far away from Tom Brady and LeBron James mentality as any of you are. So like, I play professional football, but I have no idea what LeBron James, what goes through his mind. Like today I was in a Carmelo rabbit hole because of his retirement or whatever. And then the YouTube algorithm served up the LeBron game 6 against the Celtics. And it was just a perfect thing to watch today because it seemed like he tried to go back into that mode where he had 21 points in the first half. And I'm watching this thing about LeBron in the game 6 and his mentality. And I was like, I don't know what that's like. Like, I have no idea. I can't even imagine what it takes to get to that place or how it feels to be in that type of zone. So if you got to take your jersey off early on your way back to the locker room, I don't know what he was doing back there. Maybe get an IV, get a little fluids in his system. Who knows?
You know what? I don't know for sure, but it would have been a good idea, right? Don't you think would have been a good idea to get an IV at that point?
Sorry, I meant to bring this up too. Sorry, Mina. You had the game on mute. Yeah. And you said that everything that LeBron did, you can't ask for much more. Man,
okay,
Mark Jackson.
I don't want to sound like I critical, and I certainly don't know more about basketball. But I I'm not a former athlete, but I am 37, and I know what giving more than you should at 38 looks like, and that's what LeBron James was doing. And Brian, it was there was some commentary about, oh, he should be driving more. He's got to be banging in there. I was like, dude, what? I mean, he literally looks like he's going to die. And he would still, in the third, in the fourth quarter, draw on these reserves that do not exist in normal humans that, you know, are non-existent in the entire Boston Celtics team, apparently. And it was, it was wild to see. I don't know, unnecessary stray. But I find that so emotionally wrenching, and it's like, yeah, he didn't win, but these are the games where you're reminded that he is not what the difference is, I guess.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
I don't mean to name drop. I really don't, but I just want to explain why I was watching it on mute. I was watching the game tonight in a restaurant with Charles Barkley and Charles Uncensored, watching a game. I've had a couple of opportunities to do that, is spectacular. Although Charles insisted on having the Panthers Hurricanes game on half of the TVs where we were. And because he's a hockey fan, and I think it's also on TNT. He was wanting to support TNT. And I was like, Charles, can we please get this Laker game on? But the other game was going down to the stretch. So he was kind of watching both. And by the way, shout out to our colleague at ESPN, Ryan Clark, who won an Emmy tonight for studio commentary. And Charles, just because he's Charles, you know, just called him right up on FaceTime while he was at the Emmy ceremony to congratulate him. So it was a fun night watching Charles evaluate that. I didn't get to hear Mike and Jeff and Mark Jackson. So I didn't hear that, but watching the game without the sound on, LeBron was, I think, trying to send a message that he's not done. Cause one of the things that has been out there, and I've been on the shows today, and this was one of the topics on the shows, is like, is this LeBron's last conference finals? Is this the swan song? And look, it might end up being the swan song because, you know, it's hard to win, you know, 8 playoff games to get back to the conference finals. But if it's the swan song, it'll be just because the Lakers don't get it done. It will not be because he is done. He is not the same player he was 5 years ago. We all admit that. But I, you know, I'm with you, Dom. I don't think this should be a down moment for the Lakers. I think they have upward mobility for this roster. They traded for a bunch of guys. They have the option to re-sign them. They have the option to go. They can create salary cap space and go out in free agency. They're not going to have max salary cap space, but they can go out in free agency and add to this roster. They still have a first round pick in 2027, I think, that they can trade. They have a first round pick in this year's draft that they can either use on a player to add to their rotation, or they can trade they can't trade it right now, but they can trade it, you know, after the draft on draft night. They still have mechanisms to get better. And so I don't think the Lakers are done at all. And look, I know that there's going to be some commentary about Anthony Davis. I'm sure that there's, you know, some people that are disappointed in him. He went 6 of 15 tonight. He had 14 rebounds. That's who Anthony Davis is. Like, you know, Anthony Davis is a guy who sometimes plays great and sometimes plays like this. And okay, that's good enough to win at a high level. He just need to get a little bit more help. And I think that they can do that. Dom, I don't think this should be viewed as the end, the sunset of LeBron's career. I think he's got more in the tank.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's already speculating about Kyrie. I think you're right. They need another piece. And AD, I was not as down on AD in this game as it felt like the internet was generally. Like, I thought he was aggressive. He was physical. Like, shots weren't going in. He was getting blocks. He was getting putbacks, creating second chance points. Like, the expectation of him to comparing him to LeBron is disappointing, but you're not going to get that game out of AD all the time. I did want to bring up, though, you said that Chuck FaceTime RC to like drive home the difference between me and Ryan Clark. I was staying in the same hotel with Kenny Smith, and we rode the elevator together like 6 months after I interviewed him on First Take. And I just stood there and waited for him to like look over so I can say, hey, look me right in the eyes, got on the elevator and got off.
Wow.
I mean, I'm low on the totem pole. It's all right. You just know where you are.
Well, you know, Charles is gregarious. You know, you know, some people on their nights off don't like to talk about basketball. Charles, not one of them. Charles likes to talk about basketball all the time and golf. To be honest with you, we talked a lot about the PGA Championship. He's all excited because he's buddies with Brooks Koepka, and Brooks Koepka, you know, won the PGA. And I think he's coming to the, he's planning on coming, I think, to the Heat game tomorrow night. Mina, what did you make of Kyrie Irving coming to his second Lakers game of the year?
I mean, I was kind of watching the game, especially in the second half, when it became apparent that the non-Bronze weren't going to contribute enough, and that, of course, Bron himself was gassed, as we've been discussing. I was thinking, okay, would Kyrie Irving and his shot making be the difference? You know, because I feel the same way as you guys do, I think, generally about AD, where I feel like a lot of the disappointment with AD is sort of relative to who he was a few years ago, and the sort of unwillingness, especially as a shooter, to not accept that he's just not that player anymore. And as Brian, you said, he is inconsistent. So I was watching and thinking, okay, well, what if you threw Kyrie in here instead of, you know, D'Angelo Russell / Schroeder? And I thought it probably wouldn't be enough against the Nuggets, just because they seem to be so clearly the best team and so deep and consistent. But it certainly would make them a contender next year, that you would put in that next tier. I don't know how you view the Lakers next year with, if they didn't have them, if they were to just run it back. And so, yeah, I got, you know, like you said, I think LeBron showed us he's not done. And I think the idea of throwing a player like that into the rotation, you'd have to take them pretty seriously.
I hate what it's going to do to my man Austin Reeves, though, because I feel like those off minutes where LeBron's not the head of the offense are Austin Reeves running the show minutes, which have been pretty fun, and he's not a minus on defense. And being in D.C., I've seen a lot of Rui Hachimura, and I don't know who the guy is that's in L.A., but it's not the Rui that we saw here for the Wizards, but he is a great piece that it seems like it just – people who can get their own shot. And if you asked me 2 months ago, can Rui Hachimura get his own shot, I would have laughed in your face. But in stretches of this game, like, he was putting the ball on the ground and getting to the basket and compromising the defense, blowing a couple layups, but doing things that I thought that he can build on. And if you have that, you have Austin Reeves, you have LeBron James, who hopefully will be on some sort of health management program so he can be at his top for the playoffs. You have AD. Like, yeah, I think that's something. And Schroeder's been really good, like better than his contract situation suggests. So, yeah, I mean, I like them going forward, but, yeah, they're still going to get their ass beat by the Nuggets probably.
Well, Darvin Ham moved Rui Hachimura into the starting lineup tonight, and he played 42 minutes and went 3-of-12. I'm not sure he's a 42-minute player in the Western Conference Finals. But he obviously helped them. You know, the thing about the Lakers is this. It's not just a Kyrie or the trade guys they traded for. Let me just point something out. They played 8 guys tonight. One of them was Tristan Thompson, who played 10 minutes, and I was gobsmacked. You know, a month and a half ago, he was on the set of NBA Today with us and openly campaigning every day to join the Lakers, which worked. So here he was. But he played 8 guys in this game. Jared Vanderbilt was not one of them. He was a traded piece. Malik Beasley was not one of them. He was a piece acquired by trade. Mo Bamba didn't play. You know, he's been injured, but he didn't play. He was acquired by trade. And D'Angelo Russell played 15 minutes and was not effective. Now, we know that you're not going to evaluate a whole team by the way you play an elimination game in the conference finals. But those are the guys they'd probably much have to say goodbye to create salary cap space. If they said goodbye to Russell, who's a free agent, if they said goodbye to Hachimura, who's a free agent, if they said goodbye to Bamba and Beasley has a team option that they can opt out of by the end of June, and Bamba's a free agent. If they said goodbye to all of those guys, they could generate $30.5 million in salary cap room. They have some ways that they could potentially get some more a little bit. For example, let's say they don't use their first round draft pick this year. Let's say they either draft a player that they're not going to sign, like an overseas player or something, or let's say they trade that first round draft pick for a future pick. And so they don't have him on the books. And let's say they offload a guy like Max Christie, who's on their books, but doesn't really play. They could get to around $34, $35 million in salary cap space. Now, Kyrie, the max contract level for a player like Kyrie Irving is $47 million. So for a guy like Kyrie Irving to come straight up to the Lakers, he'd have to leave $12 million on the table. And they would also have to fill out all of those extra spots with minimum level players. And this Bobby Marks giving me these numbers. I'm not making them up. And they take into account that you, when you clear salary cap space, you can't go down to like two players in the roster. You have to account for the, at least the ability to have to sign minimum players. So can Kyrie Irving sign with the Lakers? Yes, he can. Can he sign with the Lakers for the max contract? Probably not. Okay. So let's say they generate $30 million. Would Kyrie be willing to come to the Lakers for a 4-year contract in the $130 million range? Would they even offer a 4-year contract? I don't know the answer to these questions. I know that it behooves Kyrie to have that out there because he's negotiating with the Mavericks and he wants the Mavericks to offer him a contract starting at that $47 million. And if they don't think anybody else is going to offer him that level, they're maybe not going to offer it. And if the Lakers have $30 million and he's their other option, they could offer less than 47 and still beat the Lakers' offer. So it behooves Kyrie, whether he wants to be a Maverick or he wants to be a Laker, or he wants to be some other player, it behooves him to have other teams showing interest in him and him being attached to other teams, which I suspect is one of the reasons why he came to 2 Laker playoff games. And I'm sorry for the filibuster. I'll turn it over in just a second. But it doesn't just have to be Kyrie. There are other players out there who could potentially help the Lakers. Like, for example, Fred VanVleet. Fred VanVleet is an unrestricted free agent. He has rejected offers from the Raptors. I don't know where the Raptors are headed. He could be an option for the Lakers and probably get closer to that $30+ million number. Fred VanVleet is represented by now by Rich Paul. He recently changed agents. Rich Paul is his agent. I don't think Rich Paul is going to take him to LA for a discount, but I think that has to be taken under advisement. And then there's other players too, potentially, that they could be interested in. But I do think that the Lakers, when they look at the fact that all of these guys that they got in this trade, they weren't, with the exception of Hachimura, didn't play a role at the very end. I think that they're going to probably look to try to open that cap space up to do something with it. And one more thing, because I know people are saying, well, what about Austin Reeves? Austin Reeves is a restricted free agent. And because he's only played 2 years in the NBA, opposing teams are limited to how much they can offer him. They can only offer him a salary starting at $11 million. But he doesn't count against the Lakers cap for $11 million until he signs it. Then there's other things they can do to put poison pills and backload. I'm not going to go into that, but the bottom line is when I'm generating that number of $30 million or $35 million, that is with Austin Reeves baked in as staying with the team. So that's right. The Lakers cap situation as of right now, which I'm sure is going to come into focus, Mina, because in the next month, they have to make some decisions on what they're going to do with some of these players as they figure out what's going to be next.
I guess my question for you, Ryan, is, someone who knows LeBron and the way he has approached roster construction in the past, is part of the reason why there's so much speculation about Kyrie, even if, as you laid out, it would be an immense sacrifice of depth and potentially not the prudent approach to the offseason. There's also an assumption amongst casuals like myself that LeBron James has a outsized influence on you know, the GMing of a team. Do you think he wants Kyrie Irving to be on the Lakers?
I think he wants talented players that can help him take the next step. And, you know, again, no matter what you think of Kyrie, and a big thing with Kyrie coming to the Lakers, Kyrie misses a lot of games. Anthony Davis misses a lot of games. LeBron for the last few years has missed a lot of games. And so you'd be really rolling the dice with three guys who have been missing games and then probably having no depth. You'd be going back to the where you were with Russell Westbrook, where you basically had three star players with huge salaries and a bunch of minimums around them. That's where the Lakers would go back to. And by the way, they can also walk a middle path where they could re-sign Rui Hachimura, potentially, and then have other ways to acquire players, maybe trade Jared Vanderbilt, maybe trade Malik Beasley. There are sign and trade possibilities that could happen, although that would that'd be a little more complicated. But, you know, I think that the Lakers are in for a fascinating offseason and absolutely, in my view, a one-off situation. I think they're absolutely still relevant. And I don't think that you break up Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And I think there's the concept that, you know, we'll hear about AD trade. I just don't think you do it. I think they got to the conference finals because of how good they are. And LeBron still got gas in the tank. I say you run it back and see what you can do with it again if you upgrade the roster even some more.
Yeah, I mean, I think no one expected them to make the run that they did this year. And there were so many surprises in the playoffs this year, I think. And probably, yeah, last year, too, there were a couple of surprises. It feels like the NBA's heading in a different direction because of just like the amount of talent. And it's not a kind of preordained thing who's going to go to the finals and win the finals in the way that it felt like it was in the past. So I think the Lakers have a reasonable shot if they go at it next year. I appreciate you laying out all the cap implications because that makes the conversation a lot easier and clearer for me. And I'm unlike me and I'm willing to be armchair GM. Don't sign Kyrie. That seems like a terrible idea to me. Like
the way he laid it out was, I mean,
it just like, and so first of all, like the, for him to take a pay cut, it, given the decisions that he's made over the past several years from the pandemic to not getting vaccinated to making anti-Semitic remarks and not backing off of them, it appears that there are things that are more important to him than money. So that would make Laker fans happy. Like, yeah, we might be able to talk him into this because he is willing to give up millions of dollars for whatever reasons that are foolish. However, he's not the same Kyrie that was the Kyrie that LeBron played with in the past. Like, he left in part because he like wanted his own. He was like, I don't want to be under LeBron's thumb. I don't want to wait till LeBron leaves me here. I don't know. It seems hard to believe that this version of Kyrie is a version of Kyrie that's going to like fall in line and make everything go according to plan. I can't remember the last time that Kyrie had a regular season that was without incident. So
that's correct.
That combine that with the fact that you're going to have to give up all your depth and Kyrie may not play, but 40, 50, 60% of the games, it doesn't seem like a prudent move.
Yeah, I would generally agree. I think part of it is like, you're not going to the star. You're not going to the star grocery store where you can say, oh, we have six different options. Yeah. That's the option. And, you know, I don't like, for example, the two big names out on the market this year are James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Both of them at 48 to 50 something, you know, contracts would average 50 million seem like very bad bets, but there's a scarcity there. I also think that both of them, you know, Kyrie, you know, showing up at Laker games, James Harden being, rumored to be attached to the Rockets. I still suspect that all of that is just one giant leverage play, that what James Harden really wants is to elicit the biggest offer out of the Sixers, even if it isn't a max, whatever the number of money is for as long as he many years he can get. And that this slow dance for months and these rumors are all sort of tied to that. And I think that Kyrie could be doing the exact same thing, just doing all of this and whatever he may do between now and free agency, to try to get the juiciest offer he can from the team that he's on, because those are the teams that face the most damage for losing those guys. But it's not the greatest year for free agents. You know, it's just
such a different world from the NFL, where, because, you know, you're talking about guys who our last memories of them are pretty bitter. Last time we watched them play basketball or didn't play basketball. And yet, because it's the scarcity of stardom in this league is so real, it probably they're still able to exert the kind of leverage you're talking about. It's just such a different league.
Well, it is a bit of an inflection point to see whether or not the desire for those two guys and the downsides will trump it, whether or not, because, you know, Houston is under pressure to improve from the owner. The owner like wants them to improve fast. And even if they had won the lottery, they were intending to spend all their money on veteran free agents. Like, they were not going to like build around Wembanyama with other teenagers or young guys. They were going to be like, no, we're going to still go try to sign, you know, 28 and 32 year olds to try to win games now. So each team kind of has a different situation. That's what the Rockets' mandate is, at least as of now. The Lakers' mandate is, what can they do to get better than Denver? And that's one of the things I want to talk about here. LeBron is on the podium right now, and he's saying that after the game, he was talking to Anthony Davis, and they think it's the best team they've played since they've been together in the playoffs. You know, basically, they're like, look, we just got beat by a better team. And LeBron was talking about how he just can't believe it's the way Jokic shoots the ball with behind his head, flinging it like he's Larry Bird. I thought Dirk, but LeBron's compared to Larry Bird. And so they just, you know, when you're a team that's in that situation where you see another team that's just better, the desperation, it's not, you know, not so much desperation, but it's urgency. And that favors these guys who are out there on the market. And so that's going to be interesting. Because the Lakers have the first round pick left to trade, they could get involved in the trade market too, of players that could be on the market. We don't know who those guys might be yet, but it doesn't just have to be through free agency. But I think we're going to see a lot of that discussed.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Mina, could you see yourself watching a Heat Nuggets series?
Heat Nuggets.
Which team would you be more interested in?
I think there's two sides to this for me. What the Heat are doing, as someone who generally embraces a statistical approach talking about sports, but does not want to be part of the dunking on the ESPN analytics account. But I do think it's worth acknowledging that what they're doing makes no fucking sense, right? I mean, the three-point shooting, the shot making relative to the regular season, you don't have to be a nerd to appreciate the utter sheer improbability of it. I enjoy that. I enjoy the clear impact of coaching and culture and all that. But as a football analyst, Nikola Jokic is the closest thing you have to watching an elite quarterback in the NBA. the vision, the touch, the physicality, the passing, all of it just scratches an itch for me that I just can't get anywhere. Like, no other player really delivers it. I don't know. I don't want to say I look at basketball through the lens of football, but it's just so.
Why wouldn't you?
It's that particular skill set is so rare and so cool to me.
That's an offensive bias. Such an offensive bias. If there is a player in the NBA that gives off more football vibes, it's got to be Jimmy freaking Butler. Like, he gives off the deepest dog in him, which is like a thing that football is. You don't get out there without having guys like that. So I don't know. I think I agree with you on the appreciating. I got drafted by the Broncos and spent 3 years out in Denver, so I'd love to see them win. I was out there for a lot of Carmelo years where we came up quite short, but the games were fun nonetheless. I don't know. I err on the side of wanting to see something that we've never seen before, but I guess both of these things fall in that category. Denver winning a championship and an 8 seed. It's not even that they might win the championship. It's that they haven't been challenged yet. They're an 8 seed who hasn't been in a tough series. It's mind-blowing.
Sorry to Brian to keep spinning this back to asking questions of you, but that you're, I'm,
I mean,
sure
he knows more than
would
us.
Much rather hear from you. As an analyst who's being tasked with predicting these series and trying to, you know, forecast what's going to happen or talk about what needs to happen, is it hard for you when a team is as much of a statistical aberration as Miami? When you look ahead, like in a vacuum, the Nuggets should destroy them. But do you find it difficult to make projections or, I guess, analyze a potential matchup based on how unlikely this Heat run has been?
Well, there's a thing. The Heat have basically destroyed the modeling. They've destroyed the modeling that is being done by the sports books. They're torched it. They have absolutely torched it. If you just bet the money line on the Heat every game in these postseason, especially if you just rolled your winnings over, you would be very, very much in the black. I don't even know what happened with the ESPN analytics model that it basically might have to be, I don't have any insight on this, but they may have just broken it because the computer just does not recognize
like
the
a black
ability.
Swan event.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And I used to live here in Miami. I spent a lot of time around the Heat. The Heat are basically the same. The players change, but the Heat are basically the same. And so I both respect the hell out of them. And I kind of roll my eyes at them because like Spoelstra is saying stuff like, well, you know, now you're paying attention. You know, we've been doing this all year, you know,
yes.
And I'm like, yeah, you did this all year and you were barely over 500, you know, it wasn't like you were doing this all year and you secretly won 58 games and nobody paid attention to you. You know, I think they won 43 or 44 games, which is good, but you know, less than they were expected. They were a disappointing team and they would have told you they were a disappointing team. So the concept that they thought they were going to be in the conference finals, much less up 3-0 in the conference finals, no, there's no way they foresaw that. But they are definitely riding a wave right now. And the thing about it is that, number one, they're very comfortable in adverse situations because their whole season had adversity. And number two, like they have just caught fire. Like, you know, we see this in sports. We see, you know, goalies catch fire in hockey. We see pitchers catch fire in a postseason in baseball. We see, you know, I don't know how, you know, typically quarterbacks are who they are, but sometimes you just see like a defense.
Nah, Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacco.
Yeah. Joe Flacco okay. Is the point. That's the one you point to. Nick he went Holes nuts. And, yeah. A Hall of Fame run in the playoffs.
Right. And so like guys, these guys couldn't make a shot for months. So they were 27th in 3-point percentage during the season. If in the playoffs, they're number one, I don't know. I'll have to look and see what Denver shot tonight because Denver was kind of on their heels. Denver might have passed them tonight. Let's see what they shot. Denver tonight was 36% tonight. So now Miami is by themselves. Not only is Miami number one in three-point shooting in the playoffs, but if they shot this percentage in the playoffs during the regular season, they would have been number one. So 82 games, 27th, 14 playoff games. I think that's how many they've played. First. Eric Spoelstra's done a great job. Jimmy Butler's done a great job. You look at Caleb Martin, who's coming off the bench and just killing. You look at Kyle Lowry, who was not so great during the regular season, was has been good in these playoffs, although not this series. Just wherever you want to go. Max Strus.
Gabe Vincent.
Gabe Vincent, 29 points in a conference finals game. They're just, they also are just making shots. And I wish the NBA didn't come down to that. I wish it wasn't about that. I wish it was more about merit-based. But sometimes it just comes down to that. The Heat are making shots. And it is, the Celtics are a little bit more primed for getting upset because they have not thrived in adverse situations. And so the ground was fertile for them to be kind of overwhelmed a little bit. But I'll just tell you what Eric Spoelstra said today. He said, look, yeah, we're ahead 3-0. We're happy. We think we're playing great. We're going to keep this going. But we could have very easily lost games one and two. They were down by double digits in both games. And in game two, they were down by double digits in the fourth quarter. He's like, it wasn't like we won all three games by 30 points. This very easily could be 2-1 them. And so he's saying that because I think he's what he's telling his team, because he wants his team to not let down. But if the Heat don't shoot 40% from three and shoot 35% from three, this could be 2-1 either direction. And so while they're playing great, some of it is just that they're making shots. And by the way, that was kind of the Celtics last year. The Celtics just shot the ball really, really well in the postseason. And look, they ran their offense and got open shots and got stops at one end and pushed the pace. And so they, you know, it wasn't like the shots were coming out of nowhere, but some of it is a happenstance, you know, and chance favors a prepared mind. I mean, they're all doing their practice and all that stuff, but you know, some of it is just the being in the right spot at the right time. And that's why you play it out. That's why, you know, the play, I think it's better when an eight seed's got a shot, when we have a 7 and 8 seed in the conference finals. Not everybody feels that way. And certainly not in Boston, where this is, you know, on the verge of a full-blown crisis. I have no idea if the Celtics get hammered again in game four. I have no idea what the rest of the week is going to look like in Boston. You could sell me on a lot of different things happening. You could sell me on nothing happening. I think that would actually be the best course. But to me, that's one of the amazing things about the NBA is how fragile it is. Now in football, you know, it's single elimination, but in basketball, guys, Jason Tatum was floating on air, 51 points. And 5 days later, he's wearing an all white suit, trying to explain how he lost by 30 and went down by three or went down 3-0. I mean, when he got that suit ready and he had this beautiful, Mina, do you call it a brooch if a man wears it?
Yeah. A brooch.
He had this beautiful brooch. It was probably $10,000, gorgeous suit. Mm. He looked like a fool.
Mm.
But when he chose he was going to wear that suit, he was probably like, I just scored 51.
Suit. Can't, you got to bring two suits. You got to bring a winning suit and a losing suit. That suit, I don't know, you guys probably didn't watch, one of my favorite shows of all time is the HBO show, The Leftovers. And there's a cult called The Guilty Remnant where they would wear all white and he wore that. It reminded me of that, which I felt was appropriate because watching the Heat doing what they're doing now makes me feel like I should join their cult. That is the only way. Like, I'm like, this doesn't make, I don't get it. I don't understand it, but I feel like I have to join.
You're ready to join the Heat cult? Are you ready to leave the Nets and join the Heat cult? Is that what you're saying?
No, we root for Bruce Brown and Jeff Green in this house. Okay, come on.
Yeah, for sure. No kidding. So Dom, are you looking, if it is Heat Nuggets, what are you more interested in looking and watching?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Spoelstra adjustments, I know we're going to talk about how it boils down to who's hitting shots and who doesn't hit shots. Like, I enjoy going in to listen to or go to watch YouTube after the games and have people who actually know more about basketball explain to me all the adjustments that Spo is making. So I'm looking forward to game one to see what his answer is defensively to Jokic. It seemed like Darvin Ham tried everything and there was no answer. Everyone's tried everything. There is no answer. Bam is an explosive athlete. That's the thing, is like, you would think that an explosive athlete who's also tall would give Jokic problems. No one makes him uncomfortable. And so I'll be looking forward to that, to see what Spo does against Jokic and how he beats it, because he's going to beat it because he beats everything.
Well, I'll leave you on this. LeBron, when he ended his press conference, probably the last media he will do, at least, you know, open, where he's taking open questions probably until October. He said, "I've got a lot to think about just personally with me moving forward with the game of basketball. I got a lot to think about." I have no idea what he's saying there. I do know he's under contract for enormous amounts of money for the next year. And I do know that he wants nothing more than to play with his son. Maybe a little bit exhausted. But what do you make of that, Mina?
This is why I asked you that question about Kyrie and the potential irrationality of offseason moves, because I don't know what a desperate LeBron might advocate for in that organization. I don't know. Like, you laid out very clearly, logically, what the Lakers should do. I don't know if that, like, I question the impact of LeBron's desperation on a potential decision-making process, but you know, Ben is thinking better than I do. I don't know.
Was Westbrook a result of LeBron's desperation? If so, you need to take the button from him, because that did not pan out quite like he had hoped.
Yeah, I will say that while LeBron does have some personnel decisions that he helped with in his career that were good, I'm not sure his personnel judgment is the best, and he wants to be an owner, and he probably will be. And I hope he hires somebody to do it, because I'm not sure how it's going to go. But LeBron is always thinking ahead. And so I do wonder if that's just the emotion of the moment, or him, you know, trying to set something up, because or just trying to have somebody talk about him for days and days when the finals begin. But that will be, yeah, that's he's been known to do that as well. Okay, thank you so much for stopping by, guys. I really appreciate it. I appreciate our producer Adi for putting it together. Mina, thank you so much. Enjoy your short off season. Dom, you as well. Thanks for stopping by a couple times during this West Finals. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you soon.